Hello and welcome back. We're here again live, Build 2016. My name is Seth Juarez. We're here with Channel 9 Live, and I have a special guest, Kevin Gallo. How you doing, bud?
Doing great. How about you?
So you work on Windows.
Yes, I do.
So tell us a little bit about the stuff you did during the keynote for those that may have missed in sort of bite-sized form, and then we'll go from there.
Cool. So the first thing I did was talk about the Universal Windows platform and some of the features that we have coming. We have over 1,000 features and APIs coming in the SDK. I highlighted two in the keynote. The first one was some beautiful UI, some effects and animations that run at GPU speed, 60 frames per second, and just give you capability to build gorgeous UI. And the second thing I showed was Ink. Great how easy it was to just get going with Ink, the hello world of Ink. Two controls, and you get the ruler and everything in it.
So let's start with that, because that to me, are we going to enumerate all 1,000 of the API? We should do that, just like number one.
I can't do it.
Would that be awkward?
I can't do it.
But let's start with the best one. When I saw the Ink stuff, I saw so many applications for that. It was amazing. Tell us, as a developer, you mentioned there was just sort of two controls. Tell us a little bit about how to think about those applications now.
So the basic thing is trying to build the application. You get an Ink canvas control. This just contains all of the strokes and shapes. Mm-hmm. Actually, last year, I showed you how to take those strokes and shapes and do things with them.
Right.
And then this year, I showed how to add the toolbar so that now you have all basically a UI. Otherwise, you would have to build the toolbar and the pens and the tips yourself and the ruler. That's all now baked in. So you put the two together. Now you can do the things that Brian showed,
right,
like build a mapping app or even go as advanced as what Office is doing or Adobe is doing. And it's all the same control. It pulls together all the Ink. And then you can use the strokes, the shapes that you've drawn, to do different cool tool things.
And what was amazing to me is that with this UWP app, you literally just drop a control.
Yep.
And it does it. So we're devs, right? How do you actually get the information you need out of that control? Because it feels like it's hiding a lot of work.
So what happens is when you drop the control and you give a space to draw in, and as you draw, it creates strokes. Mm-hmm. And so you can take each of those things and see what's been drawn. So if they draw a shape, and you can snap the shape. So basically, you can hook up lassos.
Uh-huh.
And so you can do all kinds of selection. So the idea is inside of that single control are all of the strokes that the person has drawn. And you can go grab those different pieces, do whatever you want with them.
So let's just take an example of, because I saw you added strokes on top of a bar chart, if I remember right. Are you just overlaying the control on top of it?
Yep.
And then when you get that lasso, was there like some collision, or what are you doing?
I did the lasso last year, but if you think what you can do is all I did was draw, but there was no operational, like what happens with the strokes afterwards.
Sure.
So I could easily have had, like when I selected the bars, I could go find out the strokes, see what bars were behind it, and I could do some graphic animation between the bars and the Ink on top of it. So the Ink and Canvas does the inking support. Then what you can go do is say when I'm done, so you get an event when you're done drawing the line, I can go grab the line and then look behind it and say, these positions, what parts of the graph was shown? And then I can even snap it to the graph. And that's sort of how the map worked. So in the mapping control, you draw the two points, you draw between them. It takes those two points, and then it goes and uses its own data to go map the strokes on top of it.
So just at the primitive level, you're literally just getting, here's some strokes. You take that and you do whatever you want,
right,
in the background.
And strokes are just collections of points. So it's just a collection of the points that you're drawing,
uh-huh,
as you go and do the different points. So I get that collection, and then I can do things like find bounding boxes on top of it, or I can find intersections of the strokes, and just mathematical operations on basically lines.
That's amazing, because now, I mean, you can think of some really innovative stuff to do, not just that map one was obviously a good one, but there's tons of other things you can do.
It opens up huge amounts of opportunities, and you don't have to do any of the inking work. All you have to do then is take the data and use it on top of your application.
So we dove right into the middle of the thing. Let's take a little, a wider view on UWP. Tell us what the promise of UWP is and why it's an important thing to look at now.
So UWP really is about pioneering a new way of building applications such that they can work across all of the different natural user interfaces. Of course, you want mouse and keyboard and touch.
Right.
Right, but you also want now speech, you want vision, you want, you know, writing, all of these different ways of interacting with the applications, and we've built a UI framework that allows you to go adapt to it. Even the stuff we talked about with conversations, it's another way to interact with your application. So they've been designed from the beginning to be flexible on the input and flexible on the output, right? So you can go to large screens or small screens. And the realization is that your life is really not about one device anymore.
Right.
Your life is going to be about many devices and helping to coordinate among them. So one of the features we didn't show today that's actually in the SDK is something we call connected devices,
I see.
Where we can enumerate all your devices and then you can project to different screens or you can send things to different devices. So you can now link these devices as well as connect all the inputs and outputs. Our world is going to be very cool.
Wait, that sounds kind of crazy. And this is the first time I've heard of this. Probably the first time you've said something like this.
I was this close to showing it on stage, but we decided I ran a little bit of time, so now we're talking about the platform.
This is a stage.
Exactly.
You're saying that you might have three or four devices. There might be some master device that enumerates through all of them, and you have an experience across all the devices, same experience at the same time, different devices.
Because you have an app that can run on all of them,
yeah,
you can actually coordinate the experience of your app. And so what you can do is you can go enumerate all your devices, so any of your devices, we can go get a display of them. You can actually go and use like proximity to figure out which ones are near you. And then you can say, hey, if I have my phone or if I have a PC, and like say, start with the PC, I can go say, hey, send the app where I was looking at it on my phone and go on the road. Or I can say, hey, I want to see this on a bigger screen so people can project. The idea of knowing your device graph, and this is you, and then being able to basically cause action on the other devices.
That's really cool, because now you can imagine experiences where you have actions that will project to the appropriate device. Like, hey, you need a picture here of your front lawn, and then all of a sudden your phone lights up and says, we're ready for you to take your picture. You go and take it, and then it goes into your screen.
You can even do coordinated experiences. Certain parts go to one device, certain parts go to another device. So you really can build cross-device scenarios that are coordinated and, in essence, kind of like a synchronized, not be synchronized, but a coordinated effort, and they harmonize the experience.
And that's amazing, because you could use the specific input of the device that is good for that particular thing.
Exactly. Whichever one has the best mic, use for Cortana.
That's right.
The thing we want to do, you got the best mic.
All right, so we have some questions coming on. So how does a converter for Win32 and .NET program to UWPware?
The desktop app converter.
Yeah.
This was formerly called Project Centennial, which now we have the desktop app converter. So what it does, it's actually fairly lightweight. It takes your setup, we create a container that looks at all the different things that you change behind the scenes. So everything your setup does, it kind of records it. Then it goes and creates an AppX package, which does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, it's extremely accurate. You may need to tweak it a little bit if you want to change your setup. But once you've produced that, now you have, in essence, an AppX package of an existing Win32 and .NET app. When it runs, we actually have a way of redirecting the registry so it doesn't impact the registry. This is what gives it this low impact install, and in the ability for us to update it. So now the store can update it, because one of the challenges of MSI is it's very hard to update them.
Of course.
And with AppX, we've solved this, and so now we gave access to this AppX solution that is available to all of the Win32 and .NET apps. And after that, when you run the XE, it runs just like it ran before in most cases.
But it's wrapped sort of in this better experience.
Better install. And then because we gave it identity, one of the things that we get when you create a modern package is you get identity. Now I can send you notifications. I know what app you're running on different devices, so I can launch that. And so it gives us the ability to coordinate across your applications as well. And that's what gives us access to all the universal APIs.
That's awesome. So you're saying that if you have an existing application now that's old, an older WinForms, for example,
right,
you can wrap it in an AppX package as you proceed to move, because hopefully you'll move it to UWP because you'll have much more.
And this gives you an incremental path.
Got it.
No one can rewrite it on day one, but they want to be able to write the new code. So now you go start there. It's your first step along the way. And then you go and you build, start using UWP APIs and add more functionality, or add Ink, or add a XAML UI on top of it. A lot of times people save the shared core, but build a touch interface on top of
right.
it using all the new capabilities that we have.
Awesome. So another question, when will the official Windows for Bash release?
So it'll be in beta form when we release it with the anniversary SDK or the anniversary edition of Windows. It will actually be a developer option. We didn't talk about that on stage, but you'll be able to turn on dev mode, and then you'll be able to get it from the store.
Right.
And it'll install on, in essence, the anniversary version of Windows.
That's awesome. And we're going to have people coming on, I think, here. Let me take a look at this.
And just to answer one more thing.
Yeah.
I believe in the next week or two is when the first flight. So if you're an insider, you sign up as an insider, in the next week or two, you'll get the first flight with it inside.
Awesome. And we're having people coming on at 4:30 today, Pacific Daylight Time, to talk about the Linux command. So they'll probably get a lot more answers there. All right, next question. What happened to the Android Bridge for Windows 10 Universal app?
So I have a blog on this that goes into a little bit more detail. But basically, when we looked at, we talked to mobile developers, and we had two solutions for people. And in most cases, they had both iOS and Android applications that they could have started from in order to bring it to Windows. And the challenge with the Android one was it was really inside of the same VM that we use, the same way of running the subsystem that we do for The bash shell is the same thing we use for Android. And it's fairly isolated. You get some level of integration, but you can't leverage all the new UI.
Right.
When you look at the iOS bridge, it gave us the ability to take the core of the application, much like we do with Xamarin, and build a new UI on top of it, or call any feature in the OS.
Got it.
And so, you know, most of the feedback was, hey, I'd rather you do one great and work on one rather than kind of splitting your efforts. And we felt that that was just a better solution, was to go with our iOS one. And so that's where we went.
Awesome. The next one is, any plan on Xamarin plus UWP integration / Fusion? I think they're talking more about Xamarin tomorrow, if I'm mistaken.
Yeah, there's more coming on about Xamarin tomorrow. But I mean, the way I've looked at this is, right now, the .NET API surface area from UWP is slightly different than the one that comes with Xamarin. We'll be aligning that so that there's a consistent API surface area of having that common core. And that, I think, will give you a bunch of that integration there. But it, like, the way to really look about it is you're really sharing that code that you built as UWP and going to iOS and Android. So we'll continue to make it better.
Awesome. Someone likes your shirt, man. Where can they get it?
If you're here, we have some available. If you're not here, we'll find out how to make them available.
Nice.
Because we love them too.
All right, so let's move on to the next sort of portion. Let's talk about UWP in general, because it feels like we talked specifically about sort of devices, but we didn't include the notion that Windows 10 also works on HoloLens, also works on IoT. Can you talk about sort of the UWP application building for those scenarios?
Actually, it's very similar. The API set across them all are very, very common. And so, you know, we're going to see more and more of these virtual reality and AR headsets, even attaching to other devices. HoloLens is kind of the first one that we're coming out with. So you'll expect to see this. You're already seeing this, other people putting out, you know, VR headsets that attach to your PC or to your, you know, other devices like Xbox or something like that. And so as we're doing that, those interfaces will just be another way of viewing apps. So I look at HoloLens as really just another interface, my 3D interface on top of my app, much like I have a 2D interface on top of my app.
So it feels like, so this is a question that I often hear from developers. When you're writing a UWP app, obviously you're writing it on your desktop and you hit F5 and it runs. How do you start to take into consideration that this application will potentially run on other devices like HoloLens, like the phone, like the tablet? How do you manage those things?
So if you actually go into Visual Studio, we actually have a dropdown that helps you look at each of the different views. And so we first go by saying, hey, don't necessarily look at a phone versus, you know, a PC. It's really about screen size. So a lot of your layout you want to reuse.
Right.
Based just on screen size, and then you want to tune for each of the different input types that you'd have. Right? I go focus on the ones you're going to ship with first, and then as you add the new input types, you look at how to tune it. Then I look at the device form factor. You know, when you use a phone, it's a thumb device.
Sure.
Right? Versus even a small screen on a PC is not the same. It's still a mouse, keyboard. So you have to do some optimization there as well.
All right, so the next question here from David, it's a really good question. Will Centennial Wrap UWP apps run on Xbox One?
So right now, it's really UWPs are running on all the devices. Centennial apps really work on the desktop, because that's what they were meant to run on, they were intended to run on. And so, yeah, that's where all the different code is running. So right now, they only really run on the desktop.
And that's an interesting comment, right? Because if you think about those sort of legacy applications that you're wrapping, those won't work on a HoloLens. I mean, even if you were to project it on a HoloLens, what would that even look like, right? You know what I'm saying? Or on a phone, what would that look like, or on an Xbox?
It'd be like a remote desktop terminal. That's what it would be like, right? So if you do a remote apps or something like that.
Sure.
And they have, and you know, we've thought about doing some technology like that to help bridge that, and there's some stuff we're looking at. But right now, we don't really have any plans to do it. But, you know, we continue to look at different options. It's interesting what you can find with technology and what you can do.
That's right. All right, so let's
move. No one thought Bash would be on Windows.
Yeah, I know, right?
So,
it was pretty exploding.
And we found technology that did it, and it works really well.
So let's talk to the developer that maybe has their WinForms app, that maybe has their legacy Win32, VB6, whatever. What are we telling them? Why should they move forward to WP? What is it we're telling them to move forward? What is the best reason to do that? Maybe there's tons of best reasons. Let's get into those.
So I'm an incrementalist.
Yeah.
Every time we create a big chasm and tell everybody this big thing, rewrite, it's hard. It's hard to go do that. So I've also learned that over time, everybody moves to the new APIs because they give you more features, more functionality, and they give you more value. If they don't,
we
really shouldn't move. I mean, like, to be honest, like, I'm not going to sit there and go, move the UWP just because.
Right.
The answer is it gives you value. If you want touch, if you want a different new interface, you want speech, you know, you want any of these new capabilities, these are the APIs to go use. I like to get away. I think with what we're doing with Centennial, I want to move away from this, it's this or this, to saying it's really, in essence, a continuum of experience, and I'm rewriting parts of it. I'm killing off that user and GDI stuff that I know will never go anywhere,
sure.
And I'm moving forward to my modern XAML or to a web interface, you know, or to some other technology that's, you know, modern.
So essentially, if you look at your application, there's going to be pieces that will make sense in the UWP world. Start breaking off chunks a little at a time.
You don't paint the we always say this analogy, if you have a cruise ship, you don't take it offline and paint the whole thing. You paint your ship as you go, and every single developer does the same thing. They redo parts of it as they go, and they continue to evolve their product.
Absolutely. All right, so next question. How can I get Ink Toolbar Control? Do I need to install the latest Windows 10 update? I think you mentioned that.
It's in the Anniversary SDK. So the Anniversary SDK that's releasing today will have the Ink Toolbar in it.
So for those that are just tuning in, what is the whole Anniversary moniker? What does that mean? Windows Anniversary?
It's our 1 year after Windows 10. So it's our 1 year anniversary. Uh-huh. And so it's the Anniversary SDK, because we shipped in the summer of last year, so it's the 1 year anniversary of Windows 10.
So the question is then, if you install that version of Windows, or is there a Visual Studio update? What's the?
Yeah, it's a Visual Studio. Basically, the SDK requires Visual Studio 2015 Update 2, which is available, and you get the SDK, the Anniversary SDK. They don't require you to run necessarily on the Anniversary update, uh-huh. But I recommend you run them on the Anniversary update. Otherwise, you don't get full fidelity.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about some of the apps that you've seen people write and some of the sort of innovative ways that they've used sort of this multi-factor, multi-screen sort of world.
If you look at the best one is probably Skype.
Right.
Skype runs everywhere. you got the cool HoloLens Skype, which is amazing. And then you've got also the ability to run it on the Surface Hub. And each of them surface it in a slightly different way.
Right.
That's appropriate to the screen size and appropriate to the usage. So I think they've done one of the best jobs of really coordinating, you know, because they're communal and they're communicative and they do things. They need to be everywhere.
Sure.
They do an absolutely phenomenal job of really tuning and customizing it per device.
So as you run the developer sort of experience with Windows, what are some of the features that you think developers should know about that maybe they don't know about when building a UWP? What are some things that are like, wow, you should really look at surfacing this in your app?
So, I mean, I always say the first one, and sometimes I say, you repeat the same thing, live tiles and notifications work.
Yeah.
We have data that we've been looking at. When you add these features, your app usage goes up. So you may not think it's relevant, but keeping that live feed going, that connection to your customer, is really, really critical. I think the next thing for me is always Cortana. Mm-hmm. People are using search. You want your app to get listed. When I want to find apps on my desk, you know, when I'm running my desktop, I put it into Cortana. Cortana finds me on my apps. I never have to worry about it anymore. So I think Cortana would be the next one that I would go add after that.
So let's talk about sort of the Cortana integration into UWP apps. Is that something that's native in UWP? Are there some SDK you have to install? How does that all work?
It's a combination. It's built into UWP. You create a voice command file that has a description of all the commands. To me, it's like a site map for like your HTML.
Yeah.
And it tells you like a map. And that same map is used for app-to-app communication as well. And so once you've gone and built that, you basically then go to the portal, and you can set up a set of commands to go do proactive triggers as well. And so the combination of going to the portal, it's really not a lot of code. And so you architect your app to be deep linked into, and then you go create the file that you put in your metadata that goes up to the server to go run it.
That's awesome. All right, so let's get into the nitty gritty. We have about 10 minutes. And so how do they start to imagine sort of, okay, I really want to go with UWP, I really want to go multi-form factor, multi-screen size. What would be the process? And let's get down to, like, as a dev, what are some things that I need to think about starting now if I want to move to that direction?
So the first thing I think is architect your app to have replace your UI. So you want a great model view separation. You're going to be changing your interface more than you're changing your back-end plumbing or even your on-device plumbing. So that to me is absolutely critical. If you get that wrong, you're going to be rewriting it at some point. Because user interfaces will change and the interaction models will change significantly. Then I think you want to go build it such that you can easily go make it portable. Right? If you need to, go to multiple devices and, you know, figure out where's your right layering inside of your application. And the third thing I would do is make sure it's deep linkable. This world of coordinated apps where I want to use your app with a background service, not necessarily with just the UI, with just conversations, making it bot-izable, whatever we call it, conversational interface. A lot of this is all linked together with deep links, having a schema and understanding how to launch different sections of your app. Then other apps can use you as a service, or you can call them as well. So I think those are the three things I would do to really make sure that your application is ready to live in the real world of multi-device, multi-app scenarios.
So let's look at the first one and the last one. The first one is, how do I, because it feels like if the UI is changing a lot, what are some things that I can do to sort of protect myself other than MVVM? Do I need to have a designer that goes in, a UX designer, to look at these things? I mean, it feels like there's a lot of things that are exposed.
We hire a lot of designers to make sure that the standard controls look great for you.
Cool.
And that you can just do basically layout tweaks. And I'll separate layout from like your style. Layout tends to be what happens when you change screen sizes or different input metaphors. And if you look at most of our adaptive triggers, it's about really just laying things out, chunks of code or chunk of UI, you know, that you want to move around on the screen. And so I think that's kind of like the first thing I would do is make sure that that UI layer is structured well in the MVVM model.
And then the last one was, you mentioned running UWP applications as sort of a background kind of service. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that, or as a service? Maybe I didn't understand. Maybe you can elucidate that.
Yeah, so like what we tend to tell people is, you want your apps to be able to work in the background like in a headless mode so that you get the app service. This is how live tiles work. So this is how app links work. You can go get data and fetch it. So if you know how contacts, so the contact list gets populated because we call into any app that marks stuff as a contact provider and we get data from it. And then we can launch that contact tile from the people application. I think we're moving into a world where apps are broken between a set of services that it provides to other apps, not even necessarily the ones on the device. So if I want to go be able to get data from an app on another device, I can connect to its app service. I can't run its UI on the other device, but I can connect to the data running on the other side. The health app does the same thing. The band and the health app communicate to each other as a background service. So if an app wants to get the data from the band, it talks to this background service that's already syncing on a regular basis with the band. Not everyone trying to talk to the band. And that way you have this brokered, in essence, background service. So I'm seeing this world where you have both a UI and a business logic split. Also, you have my core UX, my live app, and my background set of tasks that the app can perform on your behalf.
And that's interesting, right? Because I remember vaguely learning about this during the Windows 8.1 days, about deep linking. But can you give us like an example of something that you've seen done just sort of to help solidify how we need to think about this? Because it feels like it's something, for me, it's like I'm on the edge of understanding, and maybe there's devs out there that are the same way.
I gave you the contacts example. I think how our social feeds work as well. I also look at it, say you want to do some side of a control like lighting in my house.
Okay.
I think one of the ways we're looking at this is the background service can be the thing that connects to your devices. Each of them aren't necessarily headed. It's like the new lightweight user driver model.
Right.
So we have this, you know, user mode drivers, and we have this app services are now the new user mode driver. It knows how to go in the background, synchronize to all your devices. So, you know, every time you have all these different devices in your home, you don't really want to have a UI that turns each light on and off.
Sure.
But you may need to have a different way of connecting to it. So everything that has a device around it, we recommend you make it into an app service that talks to the device and then has a provider model to any app that wants to talk to it, control it, or feed information to it.
So I'm thinking of this like as a dev. Am I writing a single UWP app that behaves the same way, or are there several projects? How would
it's
I build it?
It's a single UWP that's broken into an app service and into, in essence, a foreground app. And the foreground app has UI, and the background service provides background data. You know, background services. You can do background audio the same way. There's several things your apps will want to do, even when they're not up.
Right.
Provide services to other applications. And that way you're not replicating that all the time and having everything try to talk to every peripheral out there.
And that's interesting because, I mean, you mentioned it, you need to think about it this way, because it feels like there's going to be people missing out on some very interesting interactions.
And this is, I think, Cortana will go mine a bunch of data and to help find things out as you provide a background service for Cortana to talk to your app. And then when Cortana wants to launch the app, a lot of the conversations that you see where Cortana is going and getting information, it can call a background service to get that information from your app, provide it in a conversation, and then if you want to pop to the UI, you can pop to the UI.
That's interesting. So say you're a financial provider and you have a really cool, slick UWP app that shows you intraday trading and how your stocks are doing, how your portfolio is doing. You might say, hey, Cortana, and the Windows, that app is not running, you can say, hey, Cortana, how's my portfolio doing? Cortana doesn't know, but she knows that your app knows.
Exactly. She can know which apps can provide financial information and can talk to them and grab it for you. That way, it doesn't have to be any UI. It can be all done through a conversation. And the app didn't have to do anything other than do a very good factoring. In many ways, it's the way we've broken out our cloud services from your client app.
That's super interesting.
Some of those cloud services, really, you want to run local services because it's all cached.
Right.
Rather than have to, everybody now has, when we've gone into this model where then everyone has to go to the cloud and no one gets that shared caching. Well, that app service can have, in essence, proprietary cloud connection to your back end, and then provide it locally to all the apps on the system.
And that's interesting, right? Because it feels like now as a developer, we need to think about our applications in a really granular level.
Yes, we do.
What task does my app do?
Yes.
And then once you do that, once you know the task, then you know how to get the UI over it.
Yep.
Then you know how to get other sort of interactions to come from outside.
You're getting it.
That, thank goodness, man. I only had
that's
to
good.
Have, yeah, yeah. So, okay, so what, going forward, how does someone sort of learn about these contracts? It feels like there's got to be some kind of contract we know in order to talk between these things.
These are app contracts. That's actually what we call them, is app contracts.
Hey, you know, it works out.
Right? So the app, the services are provided, and the app contract is the schema that is used to provide the different sets of data. So as you're calling the apps, you know, the different app services, they provide that schematized data. We call that an app contract.
So I vaguely remember hearing about this sort of a couple years ago when the first, during the first build. What are these app, what are examples of app contracts that we could sort of surface in our application?
So think of it this way, is we started out by doing it in our shell.
Okay.
So think of it this way, we have like several things like contacts, social feed, Cortana integration, where we've provided and defined a set of schemas, and if you mark your app as a certain type of app, we'll go there, call your app service, and pull that data. Other people have provided similar app services, and it's published in essence, just like you publish your cloud APIs.
Uh-huh.
You publish your service APIs, and that's your contract.
So how does Cortana know about these contracts ahead of time?
She defines what she knows.
I see.
And then you provide it in the same schema, and then you can provide that data to Cortana.
That's amazing.
That is what this VCD file, voice command data file, is an example of. These are all the commands. These are the verbal commands that you understand. And then she will parse those and call your application appropriately.
I see. So, I mean, it'd
be a lot easier if I could show you the code.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I'm like trying
it's a little
to picture,
too abstract.
I'm trying to picture code. I mean, obviously, there's got to be tons of examples out there, and we'll call out to those when we're done. But it feels like it's changed the way I'm looking at applications, and UWP is sort of driving that sort of new thinking.
Yep.
So tell us a little bit about sort of the future. Where are we going with UWP? What should we be looking out for? What should we be thinking about?
So I think that, again, very similar things we talked about before, is we're going to keep investing very heavily in natural user interface. We're definitely looking at this cross-device connectivity glue. We're really just, I think, just tip of the iceberg on cross-device coordination. You know, and it's going to require, in essence, all this intelligence that Satya talked about understanding how to coordinate. Even just how you and I and everybody in this room are coordinating requires a huge amount of intelligence and learning. We're going to need that in order to make devices do the right thing at the right time that feel natural.
And that's because, I mean, especially with the sort of the nascent state of IoT with Windows 10 on it, now we can literally have tiny little things all coordinating with each other, creating this really interesting experience.
It's a great world coming,
right? I know, right? I'm excited. So we got about a minute and a half left. Where can devs go to get started on all of this sort of UWP goodness?
Just go to dev.windows.com. You can sign up as an insider and be able to get the actual latest bits of the operating system, and then the SDK and Visual Studio there as well.
So these new bits from the, do we need the new bits from the operating system in order to make Ink work? Just to clarify, because I know they asked.
You need the new operating system in order to get the new functionality of Ink. So anything that's new functionality, you'll need.
Absolutely.
So definitely become an insider, man. You'll definitely want to try it.
So how do people become insiders?
I believe there's a link up there, dev.windows.com. It says become a Windows insider.
Well, this is all awesome stuff. I'm actually excited to look at how to reimagine some of the apps that I've built in order to make it more UWP-esque. Tell us about what's going on tomorrow. Do you know anything about what's going on today, tomorrow? What was your favorite part of the keynote? Let's start with that.
Today?
Yeah.
To me, it was the last video. You know, and that really pulled it together where they took the intelligence of the cloud and they were able to make it practical and real and build a great interface around it on their device, combining the intelligence of the cloud with the connectivity of the device to really make people's lives better.
And I think that was, And I'm glad you call it out, because that last video, man, that was pretty amazing, everything that was happening.
Yeah, and I was one of the first ones to see that before they even, you know, seen it, because I work on accessibility.
Sure.
And it's such an important scenario for us. We want to make sure we have inclusive design, we're doing things right. And this team did a hackathon. I don't know how this happened. They just did a hackathon. They came up with this idea. They pulled it all together and they drove it. And it's just
Well, thank you awesome. So much. We're out of time. Thanks again, Kevin, for being with us. Again, this is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. We'll see you around the next time.
Thank you.